This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
That is so true, like the guy says. This is Fender Bender. It is Saturday afternoon. You're listening to Joy 94.9. It is that time for another hour of motoring madness. Thank you so much to the boys for Critical Hit. I always like a listen in. It's always a bit nostalgic to hear those game theme tunes at the end. We've got so much coming up on the show today. Some very special guests, of course, as always, and a little bit something different to the format of the show today, but I'm not going to give anything away just yet. You'll have to wait for the surprise. We're going to be talking local news and international news. We've got some car reviews coming up. I drove something in a very nice part of Australia, and my guests have been in equally as exotic and lovely cars. So, stick with us. My name is Daniel Gardner, and I'm taking the helm, the wheel no less, for Fender Bender this week. Tim Nicholson is off doing something fabulous, no doubt. But I'm very lucky to be joined in the studio by two regulars, two old favourite faces in the studio at Joy. Mike Costello?
I approve of the favourite faces, but the old part, I don't approve of.
Sorry, I actually realised as I was saying it, I tried to make that quiet. I was like, no, old faces. Yes, Mike, lovely to see you. A very radiant face, I might add. Oh, thank you so much for being back in the Joy Studios. And we're also joined by another old stalwart. I said old again. A fresh stalwart of Fender Bender, the fabulous Byron in brackets Maureen Glory Matthew Diarcus. How are you, sir?
That's Maureen Glory to you.
We agreed earlier, didn't we, Byron, that we're going to be using our drag names on the show today.
We are. So Maureen Glory, everyone. Hello,
Maureen. Yes. Lovely to have you with us. And
it's a pleasure to be here.
And your host today is Extra Patty. That's my drag name because she's all about the double meat.
And she's an engorging piece of meat, that's for sure.
Byron!
Sorry.
That's it.
Lower it is a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Thank
lower
you
the tone me. to the standard we expect. Yes, yeah. Fantastic. All good in motoring world with you two boys?
Absolutely. I've been on holidays for the last couple of weeks, pretty much out of radio range. And it's always a good thing to come back to and see all this new and exciting news that we're going to talk about.
You mean Byron's been on holiday again? Who would have thought such a thing?
Yes.
She's a lady of leisure, that one.
That's right. I went to Uluru and tried to be Priscilla, but unfortunately I'm not the size of a bus, so I couldn't be.
Gentlemen, we are here to talk about cars and buses for that matter, and we're going to jump straight into some local news. Now, Mike, I believe, bizarre things are going on in the motoring world in Australia. We're a nation of petrol heads, and where previously very expensive, very high performance cars haven't done quite so well. What's happening now?
Well, you know how the economy is going so well at the moment. I mean, just ask Joe Hockey. You'd think that perhaps the most premium car sales would be struggling, but it's quite the contrary because the sports car market in general is down moderately this year. But the really high-end stuff, which is classified as being $200,000 or over, is actually up more than 25%.
Whoa.
So that's a segment that encompasses things like Ferraris, McLarens, you know, high-end BMWs like the i8, high-end AMGs, Lamborghinis, the works. They're all up double digits pretty much unanimously across the board, with the exception of maybe a handful that are getting a bit long in the tooth. It's kind of weird to see how it's completely contrary to every other sports car, which is struggling as people are obviously tightening their belt. And I think it shows that, you know, the people who are super rich, they never really struggle too much, do they? No matter what the economy's doing.
But are we talking about cars that go from 6 to 8? Sales a year?
Or no, we're talking Lamborghini about? Sales have gone from 5 to 55.
So wow, that is significant.
You know, Ferrari sales are up to 75 this year. Yeah, it's small, but there's been about 700 cars sold in the first 5 months of the year that are $200,000 or above and have two doors and a sports car.
I suspect everyone's just taken Joe Hockey's advice and they've just gone out and they've got a good job and they're on good money.
Well, if they're all double dipping, well, they've got the funds to do it, you know, as some cynic might say, but you know. Warren Glory wouldn't say that.
Neither would Extra Patty.
Oh, Extra Patty. She looks so beautiful.
Thank you.
She actually looks like her name.
Mike, you were going to take the piss out of my shirt, weren't you?
Well, it's an interesting arrangement you've got. It's a black shirt with hot dogs and...
Hot dog!
There's some mustard there and some onions. It's a strange combination. It's not the usual pattern you'd find on a shirt. Not a floral arrangement or a stripy arrangement.
And what's between the buns there?
Oh dear. Well, thankfully we're on air and people can't see that. It's just the way I'm sitting. Okay, moving on to Ford Ranger. Now, we've just heard all of the details about the next Ford Ranger. It's going to have a lot of extra kit, and it's actually going to have some segment leading equipment in it, like autonomous, not autonomous braking, but it's got active cruise control, lane departure warning. No one else is providing that kind of equipment in the segment. That's one interesting point, but Mike, you've got another interesting point about the whole Ranger campaign, haven't you?
Yeah, well, to touch on what you just said, it's got the kind of luxury equipment that 5 years ago a high-end Mercedes would have been advanced to offer. You know, it's the sort of stuff that wasn't on even luxury cars a couple of years ago, and it's now in a ute. It's amazing, and it reflects the fact that people are buying utes as family cars increasingly,
which is weird, but hey, you know.
But Ford has this really weird thing that it's doing at the moment that I don't like, which is adversarial advertising. It sounds a bit kitschy and buzzwordy, but what it means is all of their ads, they are comparing how good their car is versus how bad Toyota is, overtly name-checking, because Toyota is the top seller. And in the press release they put out yesterday for the new Ranger, the first two pages had six mentions of areas in which the Ranger was better than the Hilux. Of course, there's a brand new Hilux launching in a few months' time that will probably address all of those
things. It's kind of irrelevant.
But Ford looks kind of stupid, because it's sitting there saying, we are way better than Hilux, we are the best, Hilux sucks, overtly. Toyota's sitting back and just keeping a dignified silence, and Ford, even though the Ranger is a good car, frankly looks a bit stupid. It looks a bit desperate. It's like that, you know, person who tries a little bit too hard to prove how good they are, and it just shows insecurity.
Sure.
I think Ford is showing its insecurity here.
Well, a Toyota... Sorry, Byron.
Oh, I was going to just be the devil's advocate there. It seems to be working for them, though. Are they closing the gap on Hilux?
Totally. So Ranger's the second top-selling ute now, and it's right up there. But Ranger's also 40% of Ford sales. So, you know, it includes Falcon, Mondeo, Fiesta, Focus, all their cars.
And the Probe. Oh, no, that's not being sold for 20 years.
They've got to bring back the Probe. Oh.
Byron's got a finger on the pulse, don't you?
I have got my finger, that's right.
But two out of every five Fords purchased are a Ranger. And they've got all the other cars, and they can't sell them. So they're kind of putting their eggs in one basket.
Well, let's hope it works out. Mm-hmm. We have to take a very short break, but we'll be back on Joy 94.9. I want to hear if anyone's out there listening and interested in what we're talking about, or if you just want to make some kind of complaint about my shirt. 0427JOY949 is the text, or you can email on air at joy.org.au. This is the motoring show for an hour every Saturday afternoon on Joy 94.9. Mike has just taken a picture of my shirt to put on our Facebook page, I believe, Mike.
Well, you know, it doesn't do justice being on radio, does it? Well, I mean, you've got to show the people a shirt.
True. You have to give our dear listeners the opportunity to impugn me for my garments. More news.
Exactly.
Moving. Yes, the news.
We're not talking about the Ford Ranger anymore?
We can talk about it some more if you like.
Like saying Ford Ranger, because I think that's a sexy name for the car.
What do you reckon? That is
the only reason. So all you Rangers out there.
Now we must move on.
Yes, we must move on.
Internationally
speaking.
Not
getting much love for all the Rangers here. Sorry. Sorry.
We have to call them the red minority, I believe, now.
Oh, I'm talking about the Ford Ranger.
Oh, whoops. Yes, yeah. BMW 7 Series, moving on. It's just been revealed overseas. We don't know anything about local specification or pricing yet, but what we do know is it's got plenty of gear in it. Now, something very interesting that's happened with it is it's one of the first cars to not in the iCar range, which is BMW's i8 and i3, which are two very special little electric or hybrid cars. The 7 Series is one of the first cars, not an iCar, that actually has carbon fibre construction. So it's got little bits and pieces all over now, weight-saving, previously only seen material in racing and space-age stuff. But it's also got tons of cool equipment. Now, let me just run a few past you guys. How many cars do you know who actually have a little screen in the key itself? It's got a full-colour LCD screen in the key!
Why is that?
I'm glad you asked. It can tell you things. Now, they've introduced, with the new 7 Series, they've introduced a plug-in hybrid version. So you can tell from the key how much is in the battery of the car without it being anywhere near it. You can also, and this is one of its coolest tricks, is it will self-park. Now, I know you're going to say a lot of cars have got self-parking where you pull alongside a space, hit a button, and it does it all for you. The BMW does it without you even being in the car.
But plug-in hybrids, are they going to be expensive?
Did you just say butt plug-in hybrid?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't forget to fasten your seatbelt. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9.
Byron, wow.
That was boring glory.
Carry on. Sorry, you were talking about...
I think that this sort of technology is what these cars need, because cheaper cars are just getting better and better with technology and refinement and performance and efficiency and all those sort of things. So they have to break ground. And for BMW to start leveraging its iCar program technologies, such as the carbon fiber infused platform, that sort of thing, it just makes sense. It makes it justifies you know, spending $200,000 plus on one of these barges. I mean, these luxury cars. So,
Byron,
yeah. What?
Yeah, a little bit prejudiced towards the 7 Series?
No, I actually like the 7 Series. It's good.
Would you like it more if it had massaging, heating and cooling seats in the front and second row?
Oh, well.
Because it does.
Yeah, well, you know, if that's your thing? If that's what you like in a car, yeah. Absolutely.
But you
can kind of get that in a... I mean, I guess not. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I'll give it that.
Okay.
The massaging.
Even cooling. If you can think of cars which have massage function in the rear seats, do they have a training function, an exercise video that plays in the rear screens for longer journeys to keep you nimble and exercised?
Oh, so you don't get deep throat thrombosis. Is that what you mean?
Deep throat thrombosis.
Game of Thrones thrombosis. I can't say it. Deep. That's a great idea.
Isn't it?
Yes.
So it shows you some moves to keep yourself free at DVT.
So you know how like you're doing a long-haul flight on an aeroplane. Right. They give you these funny little sort of leg movement exercises to keep you fresh. Uh-huh. And so when you've got your important business meeting at the other end, you feel good. The TV in the back will play that exercise.
And the average car doesn't have that, but you know what I do have? I have an iPad that I can download videos on and just watch, so I'm not sure if that's super valuable.
You're making this hard for me. All right, okay, I'll run this one past you then. It has various systems around the car, including the satellite navigation and its transmission, which watches the environment and the terrain around you and will pick a more efficient route for you to go if you're trying to save fuel, or it will actually sort of environmentally consciously protect our globe by knowing that it's a more efficient route to go using satellite navigation, gradients in roads, and that kind of thing.
BMW has officially solved climate change, ladies and gentlemen.
I think the Tesla Model S has that already. I remember driving that late last year with it.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Which actually, when you think about it, the Tesla Model S really is the new game player in this kind of upper luxury.
But you're going to see that the mainstream traditional brands fight back, because Tesla got the jump. Nobody expected Tesla to be as good as it was. And I think the likes of Audi, BMW and Mercedes are now thinking, oh, holy crap, we've got a real rival on our hands, and they're going to come out strong, and they're going to try and just demolish Tesla with some amazing stuff. And stuff like is that we're seeing in this 7 Series is probably, like you say, a response to how good Tesla has been.
But it won't be easy, because nowadays Mercedes and BMWs and Audis are so mainstream that part of the Tesla's appeal is the fact that it is something different and something cool. And, you know, I know what I'd rather have.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
does it have laser headlights, though?
Laser headlights.
Yes. Oh, have I found something?
Oh, you mean from a Ford laser? That's terrible. That's a terrible cost-cutting measure. Listeners, if you're not happy with where BMW is going with using Ford laser headlights, write in and complain.
Or you can just text 0427JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au.
I actually tested laser headlights not long ago on the BMW i8.
Oh, what are they like?
They are incredible.
Well, there you go. The 7 Series has got them.
Right on.
So yeah, have I found something that you guys like in the 7 Series?
No, it's on BMW. Excellent. It is impressive.
Fender Bender, guaranteed to leave skid marks.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's terrible. I love that one. I love it. Oh, I love the controversial elements on Fender Bender.
Yes.
Moving on, guys. Now, we are lucky. We get to travel around the country and sometimes internationally driving a few bits and pieces and some new vehicles. And, Mike, I believe you have been doing an interesting comparison this past couple of weeks.
I have. I've been arguably weighing in on what is the modern interpretation of the famous Holden versus Ford rivalry, the red versus the blue, the rivalry that defines Australian motoring in a lot of ways. But of course, with the Falcon at death's door and the Commodore as we know it soon to disappear, where is that rivalry going to go? It's probably going to go into the realm of the hot hatches. Ford has the Focus ST. We know it well. It's just been updated. It's been given a bunch of improvements to make it better than before. And Holden has just relaunched the Astra with the VXR three-door hot hatch. So I decided to put them up against each other, kind of a red versus blue battle for 2015.
Nice. And how did they go?
Well, they got some similarities. They're both about 40 grand. Yeah. The Holden's got three doors. The Ford has five. They're both manual only. They've both got 2-litre turbo engines. They're both ludicrously well equipped. And they're both a lot more interesting and novel than a Golf GDI, because everybody has a Golf GDI, and these are the cars for, you know, someone who wants something a bit different.
Yeah.
They're also both front-wheel drive. that's where the similarities kind of end, though, because they go about it in quite different ways. The focus remains preternaturally talented on a twisty road. It's nimble, it's light on its feet, it's got amazingly sharp steering that's been sharpened up a little more, and you really have to be on your guard to drive it. It's a challenging car to drive, but in a good way.
Yeah, not like it's going to spin off the road and smash into thousands of pieces.
Exactly right, but you do have to be on your guard. You know, it's got that beautiful lift-off oversteer that you can get with a proper front-drive car, which people say that you can't have fun in a front-drive car, just aren't driving it right, basically.
Well, or they're not pulled over in the right side alleys.
Yeah, that's what I think too. Or the parking spot, or that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You just need a good beat. You
know? Yeah.
Exactly.
That's right.
Welcomely, that's a new word. I like it. I'm going to stick with it.
I like it.
Ford has updated the interior, because the old interior of the Focus was terrible. It was just a mess. It was too many buttons going on. The screen was tiny. It was just a shambles. They've updated it. There's a big new touchscreen. Hardly any buttons anywhere. It's a clean fascia. It's still got the awesome body-hugging Recaro seats that it had before.
Okay,
and for less than 40k, it's ludicrously good value. The Holden, though, is even better value, because it's got the sort of equipment that you wouldn't see on a German car twice the price.
Yeah.
I should say another German car, because this Holden is, in fact, a German car, because it's an Opel.
We previously had that in this country as an Opel briefly, didn't we?
Exactly right. It's also got more power, so, you know, over 200 kilowatts from a 2-litre engine. That's a hell of a lot of power for a car that's less than 40 grand. And it's got some amazing Brembo brakes. It's got incredibly expensive Pilot Sport Cup tyres by Michelin, which costs thousands and thousands of dollars to fit.
Ouch.
And are incredible. It sticks to the road like, you know,
overheated
licorice, but it's not quite as nimble as the Ford. It's sort of really talented, but maybe not quite as engaging and involving. It's one of those occasions with a hot hatch where you kind of want it to be a bit loose and a bit rough around the edges.
Yeah.
But compared to some of the stuff that Holden's been trotting out lately outside of the Commodore, which, let's face it, has been pretty ordinary, it's a revelation. It's the first properly good Holden outside of the Commodore range that we've really seen launch in quite some time.
If you drive a Holden Epica, here's your chance to ring in and complain.
Yeah, please do.
Or a Holden Malibu.
Love how Byron brings in all the heritage. You know, all we had so far, we've had the Ford Razor, Ford Probe, and now...
The Holden. Does anyone out there even know what an Epica is? I mean, remember the Epica?
You're very welcome to text in.
It's a David Leganza in drag, and not in a good way.
Where the Astra is let down is its interior. It's showing its age. It's
right.
The equipment levels are huge. You know, they've both got sat nav. They've both got amazing racing seats and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, it's a mess of buttons. It's confusing. It's hard to navigate. It's not very ergonomic. And it's showing its age, because the design is quite a few years old now.
And that's highlighted by the fact that the new Astra K was unveiled in Germany a couple of weeks ago.
Of course.
And that's the next generation model. Yeah.
So they're still selling the now outdated car. But, you know, it still looks the part. It still looks every bit as modern as it did 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
The fact that the Ford costs $1,000 less at $38,990 before you're on roads, and the fact that you get 5 doors and bigger boot, hardly any less equipment, and it's a bit more fun despite having less power, means the Ford's probably the one to get. Of course, if I'm right, and this is the new Holden v Ford rivalry, it doesn't matter, because the Holden people will have the Astra and the Ford people will have the Ford. The good news is that they're both really, really great cars. The Ford's half a point better, but the Holden is still a sensational offering. And I guess the bigger point to make here is you can't go wrong with either. And it's really good to see a properly good, fast, exciting Holden that isn't a Commodore.
I haven't driven the Ford, but I have driven the Holden. And I thought it was, well, in a word, fast. It was blindingly fast.
It is.
Really good fun. I mean, I can't think of anything else that goes quite as well for the cash. I think it looks awesome. I totally agree with you on that. Even though the design has been around for a few years, not necessarily in this country, it still looks really good.
Well, you know, and those big Brembo brakes and those Pilot Sport Cup tyres, you know, if you wanted to option them on a German car, it would cost you 20 grand.
Yeah,
now, they're not going to cost you that much to buy yourself, but if you wanted to option them on another car,
absolutely,
it's amazing they're on it.
So on that subject then, critical question, would you have either over a Golf?
You know, I'd have both over a GDI. I don't think either's necessarily better than the GDI. The Golf GDI is almost a flawless car. It really is. It's brilliant, because it can live with it every day. It's relaxing. It's gentle when you want it to be. It's also incredibly fast when you find yourself a nice twisty road.
It sounds like you just described me.
Issue is just a bit sanitized for my liking. And everyone has a Golf, just like everyone has Dan. You see, the illusions are just all over the place.
He said sanitized, not insanitized.
Ah, okay, excellent.
It's an easy mistake to make.
There's a fine line, yes.
You know, if I have a hot hatch, and if what I want from a hot hatch is a manual gearbox, rough around the edges, looks interesting, not everyone in the entire world has one in their driveway, and these two cars fulfill that brief much better than a Golf does. They're not necessarily a better car, but as a hot hatch, they're a better thing. Ford Just.
Yep. That Holden is a special car. I drove it as an Opel Astra OPC in 2013. And I remember thinking that's one raw, rugged, wild drive.
It's better now. I think the gearbox is sorted. I think the engine's got a bit more poke. It's better.
And it's even better now. So don't underestimate the appeal of that Astra. And also the fact that actually that three-door body was introduced a couple of years later. I think it was in 2010 or 2011. So it's not quite as old as the five-door hatch. So I think that if there is the three-door replacement, will come along probably in a year or so.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
It's a good-looking car. Mm. I just want to read out a message, guys. It's a very very automotive-heavy message from Tristan, who says, "Hi, guys. I'd like to say hi to my mum, Lynn."
Hi, Lynn.
Thanks, Tristan.
Can we say hi as well?
Do you realise this is a car show? Yeah. Yep. Anyway, say hello to... Yes. Mum Lynn. There we go. If you want to get in touch about anything at all, I've just proved I will read virtually any message.
You mean there's no... That's it?
That's it.
Oh, okay.
That's it. Yes. 0427 Joy 949 is a text, or you can email onair@joy.org.au.
Don't forget to fasten your seatbelt. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are. That was a little bit of the Aston Shuffle and Tear It Down, a personal favourite of mine. You're on Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Good afternoon. We've had a couple of messages in, I believe, Mike.
We have. One from Megzy saying she loves the Astra 2006 SRI Turbo.
Great choice. That's a great little hot
hatch. It's a hell of a car. I remember that car really well. Never sold that well, so they're quite rare too, which makes them even better.
Good choice, Megzy.
And, hey boys, love listening to your smooth voices and cheeky commentary. Oh, shucks. Even though I'm by no means a car enthusiast, I look forward to your show after work every Saturday. I'd get in a hot hatch with you anytime. Well, ooh, now.
Wow.
Well, now. And that's from Lynn's.
There's a choice. I'm getting
my glasses are steaming up.
As Mike says, you know, I'll jump into just about anything with just about anyone. So, great. It's on, it sounds like. Welcome back. We only have a little bit of the show left because there's something a little bit unusual might happen. I'm not telling you just exactly what yet, but stay tuned. We've got some.
You're really building the suspense here.
I think it's worth it. Yeah. I'm okay with a bit of hype. But before that, Byron, we've got a couple of cars to talk about, haven't we?
We certainly have. I've been up in Queensland driving the new three-cylinder Audi Turbo.
Three-cylinder Audi. Audi with three cylinders.
That's right, yep.
So which car is it? Presumably it's quite a small Audi.
It is. It's the smallest Audi you can buy at the moment, Audi A1.
Okay.
Yep, so that's the Polo-based Super Mini that for the last few years has outsold the Mini. And so there's a bit of a fight. Mike was talking about Holden v Ford. Well, there's a classic 21st century fight going on between the Germans, between the A1 and the Mini.
Excellent.
Last year, as you may recall, Mini was completely redesigned and re-engineered as a three-cylinder and four-cylinder turbo range, and has since gone to, well, has trumped the A1. But Audi is fighting back with the new, cheaper, and re-engineered A1 with a brilliant 1 litre three-cylinder turbo. Basically, it's the engine that you could find in the late and lamented Volkswagen Up, with a turbo stuck on it, and they've dropped the price a little bit, or they've actually increased the value quotient rather. So it's
you sound like marketing now.
Ah, well,
you've increased the value equation. Yeah, what have you done with
Byron? Brand's way of saying, oh, we've put the price up, but we've added some stuff. So really, it's better value.
Actually, they have put the price down because can now get an automatic A1 for under $30,000, significantly under $30,000.
So we're talking an Audi that costs less than 30 grand and is a three-cylinder. This is exactly what you were touching on, what you were saying before, like luxury brands are now mainstream and they're not doing just high-end stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly new news, but this is the sort of car that really makes it more evident than anything else, because that's amazing.
That's right, Persephone. It does indeed show the down market dive that a lot of these car companies are making. But in the Audi's case, at the very least, it lives up to the brand expectations by being refined and absolutely fun to drive. The engine weighs a lot less than a four-cylinder does. So what it's done is it's sharpened the steering and made the handling a little more nimbler in a car that's already quite renowned for its dynamic capabilities. So now you could pretty much justify buying an A1 over, say, a Polo, because the interior is much better looking and better finished, and it's got a more efficient engine as well as an engine that produces a bit more power and torque over the Polo equivalent, the 1.2 TSI. and it still looks damn fine. It's a great little thing. I love it. Although, let me just clarify something. The more you spend on an A1, the less convincing it becomes until you get to the fabulous S1 Quattro, which at $49,900 is just one of the greatest baby hatches you can buy.
Great car. Yep. But you're a huge fan generally of three cylinders, aren't you, Byron? You've always been on the three-pot bandwagon.
I am a bit of a three-pot screamer when it comes to fun little cars, you know, the Mini Cooper's one, but also the Renault Clio and, of course, the car that I'm currently driving for Wheels Magazine, the 308 Active... Oh, Access.
I get confused. Access is the entry level.
Oh, well, then it's one up from the entry level. The Active. That's true. Yeah. Yep.
So that's a really good car, by the way.
Yep, 96 kilowatt three-cylinder with a six-speed auto. The first great automatic transmission French car in history.
What? Really?
Yep.
You mean they've never made a decent one before now?
They've never made a decent automatic transmission car ever. And if anyone disagrees with me, please, I defy you to you know, prove me otherwise, and I'll be happy because I love French cars. I own three, but let me tell you, the 308 is, before you buy a Golf, check out a 308.
And now if you wanted something a little bit more special than the entry level Access, you can get the Lean S Extras pack, which gives you 70.
What the hell is that?
Well, it's this extras pack they've introduced to give it big alloy wheels, funky decals down the side, and some red and black flashes.
Sounds
all
stuff
there.
It doesn't need.
You don't want big alloy wheels; it makes the ride bad.
Okay, well, listen to the fun police in here. Do you want to know what I've been driving lately?
What have you been driving lately?
I drove the new Kia Sorento, which is Kia's large SUV, which I've actually, honestly, never really warmed to very much. It's kind of, in the past, it's just been a bit, I don't know. Well, regular listeners of Fender Bender will know my prejudices towards large SUVs and most SUVs for that matter. And the Kia Sorento has always been just a little bit, I don't know, just below par. Now, lots of people disagree with me. They've sold quite well historically. But what they've done this time round is they've focused less on the, what Byron would say, value equation. No, less on cheap and cheerful and way more on European-inspired styling and top-quality materials and interiors. And wow, have they ever hit the nail on the head with this one. It is a little bit more expensive. It starts around about 40 grand or 45 for the diesel. Diesel is absolutely the pick, incidentally. But my God, what a huge improvement in the quality of these interiors. It really does feel fantastic. It manages to do that difficult balance of simple without being dull. It's just tasteful and very European. The quality of the materials are great. The exterior styling, I think, is really good. It's taken a step towards, say, something like Grand Cherokee, the Jeep Grand Cherokee. It's sort of got that nice stocky, in fact, from a distance, you'd think you were following a Grand Cherokee. It's really looking great these days. And for a car to just drive around with either full of millions of children or stuff, it's really quite enjoyable. It's a decent drive.
It's got a couple of things that are really great too, which is it's got Australia's longest warranty, 7-year warranty.
So absolutely. You
know, complete peace of mind. Also, ANCAP, the safety testing body that crashes cars and publishes independently how safe cars are, just rated it the safest SUV in history, ever tested, bar none.
Wow.
And it's the third highest scoring car in history, but probably the highest scoring because it's against the latest, most stringent criteria, 2015 criteria. So this car, I mean, Kia got criticised when the Carnival only got 4 stars recently, which was quite bad for Kia. A pretty bad effort, really. But this car has just knocked it out of the park. The safest SUV you can buy with the longest warranty. And if those aren't the two main priorities for a family buyer, then I don't know what are. So, hey, great offering. Yep.
Because, of course, it does have 7 seats in it.
Absolutely. I don't understand why anyone would buy a Toyota Kluger or, you know, a Nissan Pathfinder when you can get one of these diesel-powered Sorrentos for 45k or under with all these benefits that you guys have just spoken. And it looks, as you touched on, it looks great. It's a good-looking car.
Good. I'm glad someone else thinks that, because I thought I was looking at it thinking, that's a really decent-looking Kia SUV. Who would have thought we'd be saying this?
Kia doesn't make any ugly cars anymore.
True, very
true. Great-looking range.
I absolutely love it.
They poached Audi's chief designer a couple of years ago and paid him they literally backed a dump truck of money up to his house and said, please make our cars look good, Mr. Peter. And
well, that was actually 9 years ago, but yeah, his stuff has really come through now. So
well done, Kia.
Definitely.
Gentlemen, we're going to have a little break. But if you want to get in touch and you're listening, 0427JOY949 is the text, or you can email honor@joy.org.au. We're going to be coming back very shortly with something a little bit interesting for our regular listeners. You're listening to Joy 94.9. Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, change it, point it to me. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, what's going on here? What's going on?
What do you mean, what's going on, Dan? It's Technogaze.
You're quarter an hour early, Michael. What's going on?
No. We were talking. No, you said that we could come in early because we've got some auto stuff to talk about.
Had I had a few refreshments when I agreed to this? Because I don't remember anything about that.
No, just don't worry. It's okay. It's in control. You just can go. Oh, do you want to stay for it?
We're the nerds. We're taking over.
Guys, what do we reckon? Do you want to stick around?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I guess we could.
All right. Well, wow. Let's do this. This
could
is like
cars in tech. Why
this
not?
Is like breakdance all over again.
Really? Okay, go on. Show us your moves.
Well, guys, it's fantastic to have you with us for the last 15 minutes of Fender Bender. You guys are technological wizards. But, of course, you know, in our realms that we talk, often there's crossovers. So, you know, cars have a lot of technology in them now. And so, well, why not? I'd say this is a match made in heaven, potentially.
It is indeed. And do you know what's really of interest to me? Because I'm getting old and I'm going to need it very soon. Cars that will drive me around rather than me being driven around.
Okay, yes, we can talk about that. Autonomous and self-driving cars you're talking about.
We love driving.
But that's the thing. Do you have to give up the love of driving to be in an autonomous vehicle?
Well, that's the great thing about autonomous cars because, and they're a lot closer than a lot of people realise, within a couple of years. I mean, already car makers are making fully autonomous cars. It's the regulations around road usage that's making them hard. But the good thing about them is you can theoretically, if you feel like going for a fun Sunday drive somewhere interesting and scenic, you can do that. But in the daily grind where it's stop-start traffic and you're stuck on, say, Punt Road, who the hell wants to be driving? And that's where autonomous cars are great. You can have your cake and you can eat it too.
Or catch public transport or ride a bike. That's what I think.
But are manufacturers have production-ready cars yet?
Well, no, none yet, as yet. But we're nearing. There's a few car manufacturers who say that they are very close to producing one. One notable one is, of course, the Google car. That is saying that Google, if you haven't heard of them, then you're probably not able to operate a radio.
If you haven't heard of Google, then Google.
Okay, solid advice from Mike there.
But Google's different because Google's not a car manufacturer. They're jumping into the automotive space.
But we've seen examples, take Tesla, where they weren't actually a car maker and they just said, well, we'll do a car, shall we? And Google did the same thing. They said, well, we reckon we've got the technology and, more importantly, the information to produce something that can find its own way around. And that now is nearing a more production-like prototype. They've not been without their incidents. They have had a couple of little minor traffic incidents, I'm quoting.
But was that the car's fault?
Apparently not, no.
Well, it's human fault.
They're making a very clear point of saying that it was not the car's fault. They say, you know, and it's actually an interesting point. It doesn't matter how safe cars are. People are stupid, and they will always cause accidents no matter how well the car is doing its job.
I spoke to a guy recently who's very senior within Ford in Detroit, and he used to work for Lockheed Martin, and they hired him to develop autonomous cars for them. And what he suggested is that the first rollout we'll see will be in dedicated parks. So there'll be like a business park, for instance, where within that 10k radius, autonomous cars reign, but then it's going to be slowly rolled out onto mainstream roads because there's so many variables that can stuff it up.
So it's like an off-lead park for
exactly.
your dog.
Exactly. So it'll be like a progressive rollout. The technology's there. It's actually getting it to fruition to the everyday that is the challenging part.
I think the biggest problem with these cars is going to be people, though. You know, if you let the technology do the work, it's fine. As soon as you introduce people to technology, that's when we start having problems.
No, we're better than machines. What are you talking about? Have you not got opposable thumbs in there?
Machines are more consistent than humans.
This is true, very
predictable.
True. And this is the common analogy, is that, yes, of course, if you do any sort of regular flying, most of the time the plane will be flying itself. But would you want to get into that plane with no one at the helm at all?
In previous histories of the last, 10 air traffic incidents being pilot-human error, then sure.
But for what about those times?
You can always reboot the autopilot. You can't fix it.
Yeah, can't fix a human. This is the key thing, though. Who's going to reboot the autopilot?
It can reboot itself.
Well, there are redundancy systems, huge redundancy systems in airline systems. So they've actually, there's quite an interesting thing that they've got on the Boeing 747, which is the jumbo jet, which has now been preceded. It's actually got five systems, and all of those five systems were created by different manufacturers. So that if one of them has an inherent fault, then the chances of a completely different software manufacturer coming up with the same fault in the other one, it won't do it. And so if three computers say yes and two say no, the Boeing says yes.
let's get the computers to vote. Let me ask you a question. Do you guys like driving manual or automatic cars?
Well, as I've said before, there's nothing like getting a knob in your hand. So I'm a manual man through and through.
Yes, the only car worth driving for me is a manual, I must say. But I appreciate that 99.9% of people would disagree with that sentiment.
So extending that, what happens to the 99% of people who really don't care that much about driving? Do they want vehicles that you'll be able to drive manually and autonomously? Or will they just go for the vehicles that you just operate in auto mode?
I think the bottom line there is it doesn't really cost anything extra for a car maker to make a car be drivable by you, or not much extra anyway. If they're going to fiddle the autonomous tech, it's not much of an effort to put, you know, an accelerator and a brake system and a steering wheel in a car so that you can control it if you want to. It's a very small additional cost, so they may as well. And I think there is that, as Dan touched to before, there's that reluctance for some people to be in a thing that they can't ultimately override. It's like with any robot, we want to have the off button. With any plane, we want to have a person in the front seat that can override. There's this inherent distrust of technology to some primal degree in a lot of people. And knowing that you can take over should the worst happen, I think is comforting. So I think you're always going to have both.
And going back to the Google car, it's actually going to have controls legally, so that if anything does go wrong, like Mike says, it will be controllable by a lowly bag of bones and blood.
But you know, guys, that car looks like a suppository. Seriously, it's so ugly.
It is very Google, isn't it?
Yes. It is.
Well, and cars are an emotional purchase as much as anything else. And people love cars because they love cars the way people love music and movies and that sort of thing and dancing. So I don't think that the love of driving, and that includes whether you use a manual or automatic or just, you know, want to be in control of a vehicle on a windy road, is going to diminish with the advent of the autonomous car.
But then there's a great point, is that if we've solved the problem. So people who don't care about driving and just see a car as a necessary evil will get in the Google car, which leaves people like us to get in manuals that use way too much petrol and ruin the environment and drive around like maniacs while they cruise around at the sensible speed limits.
Actually, I do like Mike's idea of these driving parks, because I think the driving parks will be reserved for people like you, Dan.
They're called racetracks. They're already a thing.
That's all you'll be allowed to drive on.
To put the analogy back on the dog roaming park, I suppose I'd be the pit bull, wouldn't I?
Now, Nissan have actually made an announcement that they're going to move towards autonomous vehicles by, what, 2020, I think?
And it's not just Nissan. It's actually a number of car makers have committed to this. Daimler-Benz previously has. There's quite a number that have said 2020 is the date. But car makers, make no mistake about it, car makers already have fully autonomous cars. The technology is already ready. The stumbling blocks are the regulations, are the practicalities of rolling it out. For Nissan, you know, don't expect in 2020 to see Nissan down the street driving itself, because there's too many other variables.
Right.
But Nissan will absolutely by 2020 have a car out there, even if it's only a concept car, even if it's only some special edition. Audi, for instance, just made an RS7, their luxury car. It did a lap of a very famous racetrack in Germany all by itself at very, very high speeds.
Not the Nürburgring.
I believe it was Hockenheim. Okay. I can't recall exactly which track it was. But these cars are out there. And look, 2020 is pretty realistic. And Nissan was a leader in electrification with the Leaf. And it really prides itself on being at the forefront of these things. So Nissan will, I reckon, by 2020, I don't think it's beyond the realms of reason for that to happen.
Well, Google has now started testing on public roads. That's a milestone because it's been authorized to do that. I mean, if any state of the United States, any place in the world is going to be first to do that, it will be California, obviously, because they are very forward-thinking. However, a little unlikely candidate to pioneer something in autonomous driving is Nevada, where they've now authorized and screwed the first plate to a commercial vehicle. So now it is legal to register a self-driving truck, of all things, in Nevada.
Does it have any slot machines in it? Because obviously, if you're not driving the car, you can spend money on the slot machines.
So are you imagining, Michael, this is absurd. You're thinking of a mobile casino.
I love it.
Actually, we laugh, but maybe we shouldn't.
If it's going to happen, I mean, obviously Nevada's going to be the place to do it. Yes, so they have now authorised, it's a Freightliner truck, which can absolutely legitimately drive itself. And Nevada has taken the step of saying, yes, we've screwed on a plate on the front of that. Actually, two trucks have got it, with the AU010, standing for automatic, and it is allowed to drive itself around legitimately and legally. However, it's not a production version. Freightliner or Daimler say that they reckon it's probably 2025 before we actually have a commercial vehicle you'll be able to buy that already now has legislation in place.
The real question is, will these autonomous trucks tailgate you in the far right hand of the Westgate Bridge? Because if they're not going to do that, I am all for them.
Will they have big scoops and push you out of the way?
I like this idea, yeah. But, I mean, no, the autonomous cars can and vehicles can drive in convoy. So, technically, if they're all in unison, then they can drive very, very close together. So it might be a sight you get to see more often, Mike.
Majestic, like migrating birds.
Well, I think that's going to be one of the biggest things with tech is if the tech talks to each other, then it's going to limit the amount of accidents on the road.
Precisely, and there's a lot of technology out there at the moment which is peer-to-peer, where not just cars are communicating with one another, but there's also roadside furniture like signs and buildings even that can relay information to cars. Technically, then the car could be peering around a corner, can see there's a traffic jam coming up, and your satellite navigation will say, I don't think you should go that way, because otherwise you're going to be sat in traffic.
Land Rover has a system now where if its suspension detects a pothole, it then puts that information into the cloud, and any car that is able and within the Jaguar Land Rover range or outside of it is able to receive that message, receives a message that there's a pothole ahead, and that car suspension can either adjust itself or the driver can get a warning to pull around. So all these things about cars talking to each other are already happening.
What? I'm not going to have my 95% pothole hit rate anymore?
Is it a game for you?
No, it's just like an observation.
What's your poor car? I feel sorry for it.
Ride quality is
terrible. No mechanical sympathy there. Your dampers must be in trouble.
Guys, we were talking before about the new BMW 7 Series, which has actually got a feature in it where it will park itself without you having to be in the car at all. So you hop out, point it at a parking space, and it will do it all for you. So, and that's a production car. That's gone on sale in Europe now. So these are all the signs that we're seeing all along, where autonomous driving is on its way, and that's actually a form of it.
Hasn't Ford had on one of their range models the ability to park itself? I know you had to be in the car.
So what that does is it works the steering wheel, yep, but it doesn't work the throttle or the brake. So you have to control the speed of the car, but and stopping it, mm-hmm, it just turns the wheel. But it's definitely a version. This is just really sort of the next step for that. And so then ultimately the next step after that is cars that can drive themselves as well as park themselves.
Right. It's going to make life really easier, because you go somewhere, you hop out of the car and you say, go park yourself.
And you can park in narrower bays.
Sorry, you said. Yes. Okay, right. Yeah.
You can park in super narrow bays too, because you don't have to worry about someone getting out, opening the door, hitting the door. You're not going to have those horrible accidents where, you know, you come back and someone's doored your car and you've got a stupid little dent in it. That won't happen, because you'll get out of the car before it parks.
And it means you can have cars with those fabulous gull wing and butterfly wing doors that you can't get
out of.
That'll
be mandatory.
That's right. Every car can have those. They're suddenly practical. This is brilliant. It's the best thing I've ever heard.
I can imagine that there'd be an improvement in fuel economy if you've got cars driving responsibly.
Absolutely. And yes, of course. Where's the fun in that? No, it is one of the potential benefits of autonomous technology. As we were mentioning before, if cars drive very close together in a convoy, effectively only one of them is subjected to the aerodynamic drag at the front, and all the others slipstreaming or behind one another, they actually have dramatic improvements in fuel use. So there's a lot of ways in which this can be good for the environment as well as safety.
And a lot of this technology is actually dovetailing with electrification of vehicles. So we're not talking about emissions from tailpipe emissions anyway. In these cars, we're probably talking about fuel cell vehicles in the future, which use hydrogen and only emit water. So, and they are already so electrified that they just talk to each other and that sort of thing, and they can probably drive in the most economical way, using the most economical route, which it's all just kind of coalescing into one big matrix, really, isn't it?
So there's quite a few candidates. We were talking about the Nissan before. They're electrifying the Leaf, and that's probably going to be their first autonomous vehicle as well.
The future's looking bright. Now, do you guys want to, not wishing to hijack your show, but I have, do you guys want to hang around for a little bit longer into Technogaze?
I think we're going to have to say cheerio to Byron.
Bye-bye, everyone. It's Maureen Glory says bye-bye.
Okay, we're coming up with the news at 5 o'clock very shortly.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.